Welcome to the podcast of National Institute of Chemistry. You can relax and pour yourself a favorite drink from a nearby Erlenmeyer flask, Baker, cup, because the days of complex scientific reading are behind us. We are here to provide you with engaging and accessible explanations of the latest discoveries. In this episode, I'm hosting Dr. Jure Borisek from the Laboratory for Cheminformatics Theory Department at the National Institute of Chemistry, who will introduce us to how computational simulation of molecules can contribute to understanding the molecular mechanism of RNA cleavage. Hi, Jure. Thank you for accepting this invitation to record this podcast. And I'm curious, what motivates you to work in the field of computational chemistry and biology? And what excites you the most about your research today?
Hi, thank you for having me. Well, this, let's say, computational chemistry field is quite a broad one. I'm dealing mainly with molecular simulations on atomistic level. And with this technique, we can get all sorts of insights. You know, how atoms move, why some drug binds to some target like enzyme or protein. And we get really this basic insight what's going on this really detailed scale. And this detailed scale on atomistic level really fascinates me.
Very nice. You can see a lot, yeah, with the computer science.
This is some kind of a microscope that gives you insight. No, it's not microscope. It's just computational tool. But you know that you see this moving or these very small pieces around and what affects what. And let's say, for example, you can add one additional artificial ion and you can see what this change triggers in the whole system.
Oh, it's like a little bit more like reminds me comparing to what you do in the laboratory, otherwise like working with the solutions and going in a microscope and you don't see and you don't know. It's your work is more like a video game, you know, you can you're doing it on computer and seeing the molecules in graphical representation.
Yeah. And compared to wet lab, we relatively quickly get results. So we can just insert one atom somewhere and then we can immediately see how this influences everything. And if we do, if we do something wrong, it's not a big problem. We do it again and there is no harm. We don't waste too much time and too much money on it.
Yeah, this field of research that you're doing is very specific. It's interesting, but there is something else unique about you. You're a chess grandmaster, and I did a bit of research, and there are less than 2,000 grandmasters worldwide, and there are estimated around 8 million active scientists in the world right now. So it's quite my rare privilege to speak with somebody who bridges both chess and science. Now my question is, how can the knowledge you have or the tools you have from the chess help you with scientific research?
Yeah, so first of all, I didn't know of these interesting statistics. Maybe I should switch to chess again. So there I'm more unique and there are less of us.
No, you are very unique because you are a grandmaster and a scientist. So
Yeah, I'm kind of a hybrid, but maybe if you want to be really top in the world, you should devote yourself to one field. Yeah jokes aside, maybe, yeah, it's not so straightforward answer. How could my chess help me? I think interesting fact is that majority of chess players are more orientated towards social sciences, not natural sciences. I'm kind of exception there. But overall, maybe also this, let's say, preparation for chess game is kind of similar when we are preparing a plan what to do. In a way that we have to look through the literature, we have to design our experiments, we have to think ahead 2-3 steps. And also in chess is very important, I think, as well as in science, this so-called strategic thinking. So what do we want to achieve what our end goal.
Yeah.
And try to put this end goal as high as possible, so that at the end we get at least something out of it.
Yeah, but for me, interesting is that in science, we feel like we are always running after publishing first, like we are under this high pressure that conduct the research quickly, make the results quickly, publish quickly. But how does it compare to chess? Because in chess, you're also taking high stake decision-making, quick decision-making. So maybe for you, that when you play in a world championship or in Olympics, there probably the pressure is much higher than in sitting in the lab every day doing the science.
Yeah, for sure. That's why I'm now more or less retired in chess, because it's very stressful. Mm. No, in chess you have only one game to win a game.
Yeah.
That's the goal. It's not, and then, you know, it's binary kind of. You win or you lose. You can make also a draw, but when you make a draw, usually nobody's happy. Yeah. Neither you nor your opponent. But it's like, you know, this you win or you lose. So you are everything or you are nothing. And when you get older, it's much more difficult to accept this. Compared to science, let's say in science, you can get a reject from nature, but then you publish somewhere else. So eventually you get published your research.
Mm-hmm. And you can still be the first in the world to publish it.
Yeah. And also in chess, you know, your decisions are much more costly than in science. Mm-hmm. And you have less time to decide. So let's say in chess, every move you have to be, you shouldn't make a mistake. And you don't have much time to decide per move, let's say in minutes. Whereas in science, you have more time to think and try different approaches.
Mm, interesting. Just the other day, I was thinking, can somebody quit science? Can somebody say, I'm not a scientist anymore, I will never do the research anymore? How is it in chess? Can you lose the title of grandmaster? And can you really quit chess? Like you say, I will not play it anymore, even with my friends. I mean, you know what I mean? Is chess very deep inside of you? You want to play it despite not playing in competition?
Yeah, unfortunately it is. So probably until the end of my days, I'm going to play chess in at least online all the time. So yeah, but regarding titles, yeah, chess grandmaster title is permanent. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can draw some parallels to professor title also. I think it's permanent, but we also have chess ratings. And these ratings are kind of there, even if you don't play, compared to tennis or other sports. If you stop playing in tennis, then you go to zero, probably, on that ATP rankings. Uh-huh. But in chess, your rating is still there. So you can even retire for 10 years, and then you come out of retirement, and you will still be there.
Mm, very interesting. You left. Nice. I learned a lot about this, and now we will learn more about your current work of research. The paper we will discuss today is the result of a collaboration between researchers from the National Institute of Chemistry Slovenia, where you, Jure, come from, and Computational Biology and Medicine, CNRIOM unit at School for Advanced Studies Italy. The paper is titled Third metal ion dictates the catalytic activity of the two metal ion pre-ribosomal RNA processing machinery. And it was published in prestigious journal Angewandte Chemie. And the expert opinion on this work was provided by scientist Lorenzo Casalino from UC San Diego.
Understanding the elusive role of a third magnesium ion and the role of potassium ions in enzyme catalysis are long-standing challenges in nucleic acid processing. Using advanced QMMM molecular dynamics simulation, the authors discovered that the third magnesium ion actually inhibits the ribonuclease catalytic activity within the mitochondrial RNA processing complex. Surprisingly, the replacement of the third magnesium ion by a potassium ion propels the phosphodiester bond cleavage by promoting an essential proton transfer. This breakthrough not only clarifies the role of these ions, but also highlights a general mechanism of cation switching in ribonuclease-like enzyme. This could have broader implications for understanding RNA and DNA processing. It is definitely a significant leap forward in unraveling the fine details of how these enzymes work.
Lorenzo Casalino very nicely summed up your work. And could you please further describe the research field that the work of this paper touches upon?
Yes, so this story started like 7-8 years ago when I was at postdoc at the lab of Professor Magistrato. So there I was dealing with simulations, all kinds of simulations of spliceosome. And one part of it was also the catalytic mechanism of the spliceosome. And then we kind of broadened this to catalytic mechanism of similar RNA processing machineries. So here is the point is that pre-RNA gets processed before it matures to mRNA, let's say, and other RNAs. So so some parts are getting removed, some parts are glued together. And we are interested in these atomistic details, how these, let's say, fundamental things for life work.
Mm-hmm. So the motivation for this paper was already some previous work that you did?
Yeah, so previous work that we are building upon. And yeah, probably we'll touch this in further questions. But we are discussing, you know, if you want to cleave RNA or DNA, you need some proteinaceous environment, some enzyme. And then you also need at least two metal ions and probably also some additional metal ions. Mm-hmm. And maybe also other cofactors. And now, over the years, we are adding complexity. We are trying different ions. Also, there are more and more. So our research, this computational chemistry or molecular simulations are based on the... So our input are experimental structures. And over the years, with the advent of cryo-EM, of this boom, we are getting more and more our starting point for our simulations. And that's why we can add complexity and study more and more systems and try to draw some more general conclusions.
Mm-hmm. You're trying to, what we cannot conduct in the wet lab, you're trying to first see if it can work in computational simulation, try out many different possible ions or other things that would have an impact to the cleavage of RNA.
Yeah, so the good thing or the bad thing of our methods is that we are studying catalytic mechanisms, which are very difficult to study experimentally in the wet lab. But you know, on the other hand, we are afraid that in 10 or 20 years, this would be possible and they would, deny all our conclusions and our work would seem really worthless.
Yeah.
Because we cannot instantly test if our hypotheses are right or not.
But you need eventually also. So you're taking basically the research from the wet lab, trying to improve it, to try to find something new. And actually, you're giving ideas then to the people who are working in the wet lab. What can they test for real?
Yeah, but for us, let's say, to seem smart would be the best if we had experimental validation at the end.
Yeah.
But for now, it's for at least this catalytic mechanism, it's not possible for most of the systems.
Can you describe how your research actually looks like? So what do you do? How is the process of computational simulation going?
So as I briefly mentioned, we start from the experimental structure. So basically we are following papers in good journals, let's say, and following which structures have been deposited on that PDB structural database. And if we see something interesting, we first check if some computational studies have been done. And if not, then we study this structure more in detail and try to see if we have all the components for the in silico reaction to work. And if all these pieces kind of come together, then we start simulating.
And the simulation, this is conducted on the computer. How does it look like? I mean, we know how the computer looks like, but probably the usual office computer cannot do the work.
Yeah, I can also briefly tell you a bit more in detail. So we get the 3D coordinates from experimental data. And then we preprocess this and put in the system. We usually solvate everything because we know that in our organisms is everything in water. So we want to be as close as to physiological conditions as possible.
So you solvate, the computer to solvate.
Artificially water molecules. Mm-hmm. And then once we have prepared system, we put it to simulations. Mm-hmm. So we apply this our simulation protocol, which is usually done on supercomputers because it takes a lot of computational resources. And then we get results and we do analysis again on our, let's say, desktops and notebooks.
Yeah, I asked you to send some photo from your research work and you sent me the photo where you stand with your computer in front of some big black box. What is that big black box?
Yes, so if I recall it correctly, in my hands, I have this small notebook, and in the background is this, let's say, very big wardrobe, black one, which you cannot see really much. Mm-hmm. So there are many servers there, CPUs and GPUs, and we are sending simulations there. For a reason, maybe one simulation we could also on our laptop, but if we do simulation on laptop, then we cannot use this laptop for anything else. Mm-hmm. And it would overheat and it would produce some strange noises and I would be really concerned for its health, let's say. And on the other hand, on supercomputer, we can do a lot of simulations in parallel. And this unit of supercomputer, this small unit, is also much faster than laptop unit.
Mm-hmm. And how long does it take from the time that you start the simulation until you get the results?
Yeah, actually not so long, I would say. I would say days to weeks, mm-hmm. very, very rarely months.
Uh-huh. Depends on what you want from it.
What do you want? The size of the system and what would you like to see?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what are the biggest limits of your work? What your imagination, what else could you add, what else could you ask, but what's the limit of the system?
The limit, as I mentioned to you, is probably this endpoint experimental validation. Mm-hmm. This we would all like to see. And the quality of input data, because this saying garbage in, garbage out. If you don't have good input for your model, doesn't matter which kind of model, be it computer simulation, be it some AI modeling, whatever, you cannot get good results. Mm-hmm. So I would say we are quite limited with the input data. And we are still limited with computational capabilities. Mm-hmm. So let's say if we were to simulate protein folding, we would need much, much larger computers and to run it much, much longer. Mm-hmm. So this is still not possible in 2024.
Okay, let's see what the future brings. And what were the main results, main findings that you got after the simulations?
Yeah, in this concrete study, we found out that additional ion, potassium ion, is very important. In the input structure, we had also one magnesium ion, which blocks the reaction. This is kind of... We have some kind of intuition, and according to our intuition, of course, that's a strange positioning of magnesium ion. Out of it, we would assume that it shouldn't be there. Also, authors mentioned in their experimental paper that probably it's not there. And we kind of confirmed this, and we removed it, and we tried similar reaction, and it still didn't work out. And that's why... from some other studies, they observed additional ions that could add to catalysis. And then we added these ions in each position they suggested and at some certain position. And this potassium ion was the only one that worked out at the end.
Mm-hmm. So this the importance of this potassium ion and the inhibition of the third magnesium ion. These really top findings. And how will these results advance the field of research of RNA cleavage, how will it help in the future?
Yes, so let's say our ambition is that one day we would like to establish some general model of RNA catalysis, and we think that regardless of the enzymes of the system, it should be more or less the same for everything. And this is, in this regard, this is one step towards this mechanism. But for this, we would also like to study more of systems of this kind. And of course, this end goal would be that some experimentalists would one day confirm these findings.
Yeah. And looking back, what would you done differently conducting this research, or what are you already doing differently than you used to before you started the research for this paper?
Yes, so now in 2024, we are lucky that we have quite a lot of computational power, so we can run in parallel different experiments. So I can try, let's say, 20 different systems, and after a few weeks, I inspect the results and then take one of them and say we succeeded. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to sequentially do these simulations. We are lucky enough that now, in, let's say, a relatively short amount of time, we can get a lot of results.
Yeah, this is amazing. You can run many different experiments at the same time and then compare them and see what works.
Let's say, compared to wet lab workers, we don't have to be there. You know, computer does it on its own. We can go on holidays, we can have free weekends, whatever, and when we come back, we have results.
If nothing goes wrong with the supercomputer.
If nothing goes wrong, but even if something goes wrong, we just rerun simulations and come next Monday and we get results.
So we have. So you're on the holidays basically all the time.
Yeah, we kind of have this in silico slaves, you know, who works for us and they don't complain. They, you know, we have just provide them electricity and that's it.
Nice. So during your work on this project, you must encountered a number of amusing or less amusing events. Can you have any anecdote that you can share with us that will remind you on this research for years to come?
Yes, so the most delicate stage is the system preparation. And if you do some mistakes there, then you get completely wrong results. And you can figure out this after the simulation is over, if you're lucky. If not, then when, you know, you get the revision. I remember that in one previous project, I forgot to set the bond between two cysteines, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then some correlation matrices came completely wrong. Mm-hmm. No, correlation matrices was blue and red, this heat map, and there was one straight white line. And we didn't know what was that, and then I figured out that I set in the wrong way the simulation.
Back in the days when you were running one by one. So.
Yeah, and also now reviewers and editors want us to run simulations in parallel to do replicas, mm-hmm. so that we prove that our simulation is not complete coincidence. And then it's quite stressful if you, for one replica, for the original simulation, you get very good results, but you cannot repeat them with this next replicas you are doing. Oh. So I believe it's something similar also in the wet lab when you have to do this.
Absolutely. But it's interesting because I never thought about it. I thought that, in the wet lab, you know, you have the human impact, you do something wrong, like you can make a mistake, maybe the system is working okay or the temperature changes or something. But I thought in computer, you know, you put all the numbers the same, you run everything the same and still doesn't come out.
You don't put exactly
the
all the numbers, you change a bit of the numbers. But, you know, if we are kind of sampling this conformation space with simulations, mm-hmm. and the longer the simulation, more of this configuration space could be sampled, conformation space. And if you get different results, that means that for your system, your simulations are not long enough, and that you just sampled one part of this conformation space and another part not. So your simulations are kind of useless.
Okay, despite all possible, what could go wrong in your research, and the limits you published very well in a very good scientific journal. Actually, if I'm honest, this was one of the journals I hoped to publish one day in. So congratulations for publishing in Angewalte Chemie, and thank you for being the guest of this episode.
Yeah, thank you again for having me.
The guest of the seventh episode of the Papers Illuminated Szlankarnica podcast was Dr. Jure Boriszek. We encourage you to tune in again next month as we explore fresh insights from a new paper.